afternoon, everybody. This is Alexandra Metters of GalacticConnection.com, and today is June 11th, 2013. Today I have a very special guest named Martin Ellis of the SERPR organization. And Martin has a very, very interesting background. He was basically a champion of gymnastics, taking 14 Great Britain titles. Wow, that's amazing. And traveled extensively due to this. And he's experienced quite a bit of, because of some injuries he had, he's experienced some psychic abilities that emerged. And when he was 22, he became a public medium. My gosh, I can't believe this, Martin. Your background is amazing. He was a long-term meditator and a healer. Had a very close relationship with Brahman, who was a bioenergy master of Bali. I'd love to hear more about that. And then he decided to found SERPR, which is the Center for Research and Policy on Extraterrestrial Relations. And he is currently residing in England right now. So, Martin, thank you so much for coming on to our show today. I really appreciate it. And I would love to hear more about SERPR. I want to clarify for everybody listening to us right now that one of the reasons I reached out to Martin is because I became very, very interested in being able to bridge the schism, so to speak, between the UFO community and the spiritual community. And I was very, very intrigued by the verbiage used on Martin's SERPR website. And one of the things that you had said on there, Martin, was in the human-initiated ET contact, you use an expanded state of consciousness training. And I thought if you could, tell me a little bit more about that, how you go about doing that.
Sure. And first of all, thank you so much for the opportunity coming on, Alexandra. Absolute pleasure. It's all mine. Well, thank you for that intro. Well, it actually really begins, it goes back to 1981 when that consciousness expansion occurred as a consequence of a taste, it was called for me, a taste of unity, which is an absolutely astonishing, ineffable moment of total wonder. And it happened quite suddenly. And from there, everything started to change for me. And at that time, I was an international gymnast. And yet suddenly now I'm emerging into another consciousness landscape, if you will, where suddenly there are these various psychic abilities that are just beginning to flower, and healing too. And so that was all part and parcel of this incredible unity experience, and it was called by so many names, such as Samadhi, Mystical Experience, Cosmic Consciousness, Satori is another view, and these are just labels, if you like, on the edge of the wheel, pointing inwards to the center, which is a union, if you like, with everything, and that's really where it started. And so there was a huge shift, you know, an interdimensional shift. And that's when my contact with star friends and beings and started to really make itself apparent. And so really today what we have is a program from SERPR that is highly consciousness focused. And the root of that focus goes back, way, way back, to that incredible, ineffable moment of wonder in which consciousness expands very fast, and so much so that things begin to shift internally. So there's an intrapersonal dimension to contact. And so this is carried forwards today with SERPR. So that's the general you know, root of how the program of consciousness with ET contact comes into play and plays itself out with regards to our trainings, which I'll go into further with you.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's interesting. We have something in common here which we've never discussed before, and that is you had your injuries and you were going through a healing process, And I actually say a crisis. I was going through the major accident that I experienced in 2001, and I was in bed for 3 years. That is when I can relate so much to what you're talking about, where I really was so out of body and just in a state of bliss because it was the only way to cope with the pain.
Right.
And really was able to make that connection with my star families and my, you know, my star contacts. So it's very interesting. How do people, I think the number one thing people want so badly to make contact, how do people get out of the fear in order to do so?
Yeah. Well, that's a very good question because it leads into key issues with what it is to be human and to suffer being a human. And this is what is put across a great deal in the workshops on the trainings that we do. And I try to allude to the blocks, if you like, that people have in place, either put there themselves or unconsciously, that prevents that seamless contact with our star cousins and friends, brothers and sisters. And this is a key issue here. And essentially, you know, we have this anthropocentric projection onto the great infinite unknown. And one of the objectives for SERPA, and certainly for my directive here, is to try to help people reestablish an inner connection with themselves that negotiates a path around these programs and then emerge, hopefully, with a better reconnection with ET that is just there waiting for us to make that connection and relationship.
Very cool.
So one of the issues is trying to get aside from ourselves. We're often in the way of ourselves. And part of the training here in the SERPA program is the acknowledgement that those who are coming to the training have gained, to some extent, either conscious or unconsciously, an awareness on an interdimensional level, the nature of themselves.
Mm, I like that.
Yeah. And so what we do is we pick up from there. So those who are attending and that are in my good keeping, if you like, for the time that we're there, it's my objective and mission to try to align themselves with themselves, firstly, and thereby align themselves with not just our own star family, but also in a wider open consciousness. So there's a number of skills I deliver to achieve that. So,
yeah, I noticed, Martin, you have down here interdimensional communications, bioelectromagnetics, emotional intelligence, and psi skill training. Wow, those are some pretty big terms. But that's basically what you're training people on doing, or?
Yes, precisely so. I mean, it's taken probably a good part of 30 years of contemplating, you know, as one does, you know, stand and stares and, you know, looks at the clouds and just ponders and hopefully, you know, gain a little insight and gain a little bit of self-knowledge, which is beyond books. You know, it's this has been my challenge, really, to draw in information that is helpful for everybody that doesn't come from books. So that's something I wanted to mention. And the other thing is that that it's often said, you know, it's not about lights in the sky. Well, it's very, very true. And insofar as that it's enthralling and it's amazing and it's quite a eye opener indeed, you know, quite a challenge when you see phenomena in the field. And when we do our trainings, this will be the case with many who come. And there are testimonies on our website that will show you this. It's also at the same time a opportunity to develop that internal side of ourselves. And there's a lot of people who are wanting to find out, you know, the nature of themselves, if you like, wanting to find out what their mission is, wanting to really bring forwards a more of awakened state. And those who are involved in the spiritual arts are looking to increase that ability as a practitioner and so forth. So what's all this got to do with ET contact and lights in the sky? Well, I see it as an intermediary bridge where you would normally have, say, a master who is working with you and through you. We have our ET cousins who is a kind of an interface too. And so you have contact, but then there is the internal contact. And it's again, part of the SERPA program to focus on such as one's bioelectric field. So we do exercises that you can contact that. The old vernacular is aura, if you like. So the one's bio energy field is present, and we practice expanding that. We get in touch with it so you can feel it and expand it. Now, the point of doing that is so that you can sense in the environment our ET friends and cousins. Sometimes it's very subtle, and we need to be able to recognize and feel information coming through. The key here, actually, with the intrapersonal aspect, is waking up. It's totally about becoming more awake and aware. And so it is far more than lights in the sky. It's very much about that interdimensional reality of which we are, waking up to those facts, becoming sensitive, and on the course doing these skill trainings that enable people to be able to effectively interface with ET that are there helping us and to develop our humanity and our consciousness to that point where we will become peaceable and more effective with the contact of other humans, you know, as we move forwards.
Yeah, you know, I really feel like we're going into a whole new definition of spirituality for the community. Because of the fact that for so long we've, you know, yes, it's very important that we go within. I mean, basically, ascension is an inside job. And, you know, we need to really perfect our own level of communication and peace and harmony and self-love and that sort of thing. But right. I also feel like it's very important for us to realize that we're going into a whole new stage here as far as communicating outside of ourselves. And because it hasn't been physically, you know, showing up in front of us, because it hasn't been something that we can touch, see, feel, hear, you know, whatever, smell, it's a whole new ball game. You know, the days of just sitting in a cave and meditating all day are getting a little bit challenged.
Sure.
You know, so I think it's so important. This is really, I feel, the next step for the spiritual community to really, truly bridge that gap of a lack of communication with the star families. That's not to say to put them on a pedestal or to say they're better than, but right. Just like you said, I love the fact that, you know, on your website, it says independence, not independence. I love that, you know, where we're still maintaining our own mastery, but we're bridging the gap of that communication of beings that are clearly, you know, they're definitely on a higher dimensional scale. They have things to share and teach us. And so that kind of leads me to my next thing is, I mean, do you believe that we were seeded by the ETs here?
Well, that's a very good question. The first thing is we can speculate and we can use a priori and use reasoning. And I personally, the answer to that is, as I sit here, I wonder whether, you know, this is so. However, the Darwinian view is rather old hat, and it's just untenable, the idea that, you know, we are purely a, you know, have come from ape. And this is almost laughable.
you know. I know, it's insane.
You know, he was obviously in a very, well-off family and was in with a lot of sort of, you know, elite people of the time. And he was very much in with his concepts and ideas. But I don't disrespect that at all. There's a lot of sincere and very intelligent and worthy for respect Darwinians around. In short, my sense is that it's more likely, in my view, than not. I mean, for example, I take the view that the universe is a biological universe, and so if you take that view and run with it, and say, for example, we have intelligence that has now surpassed itself in terms of it becoming peaceable, and now it's technologically very advanced and is able to move around the cosmos. What better could you do than to help nurture and seed life along? And in that sense, you know, there's every possibility that there are systems, you know, in the cosmos that have been seeded. And of course, the question is, have we been seeded? I do favor that view. I do favor that view. But I do admit it's not something I often ponder.
I don't know. I find that hard to believe, Martin, because you're a very deep thinker. You're always pondering, and that's why I enjoy talking to you. Well, so explain this. You mention on your website the remote view vectoring abilities. What exactly is that, and what protocols do you use to vector with star families?
Sure, right. Well, there are a number of skills here that one can employ. And for a lot of people, you know, remote viewing in the traditional sense is very difficult. It requires one's consciousness to be placed in a position whereby it's out of your body, if you will, and you're viewing from an exterior perspective. And that for most people is just impossible. So the teaching, what we do is what I call a secondary remote view. Now, what that is, it allows people to use their internal visioning to extract themselves slowly, and I can guide this in a meditation, out of their bodies, and we go exo-atmospheric. And from there, we can do our invitation to ET to come and join us. And so in terms of enabling people to be able to view remotely in a secondary sense, people are encouraged to pull back from Earth, if you will, and go exo-atmospheric and look back and then ask ET to come through and join us in the field. That's one particular method. And another one, which is using again the idea of envisaging star flares. Star flare is like commonly also known as a flashbulb, where ETV is making itself known. And so this is not quite remote viewing, but that's more coherent thought sequencing, which is an interesting area that we're kind of developing towards a group of people coherent together and looking up at a star field and producing a star flare and then waiting and see a star flare return. So it's like a flashbulb, and that's like a communication coming back.
That is so cool. I remember when I went to where they had the night vision goggles, and we went out there and we were like, you know, I must have seen 44 that night. And I remember one where they sent a laser to the ship, and then I can't explain how excited I was when the laser actually was sent back from the ship to us.
Yeah, sure.
And it was just like, oh my God, they really are there. They really know that we want to make contact. They really are, you know, it was just such a high. So this is similar, but different.
Yeah, this is exactly. We're introducing kind of new protocols and being creative as we go along. And one of the future projects that I think I mentioned to you before was to have maybe up to 12 lasers just clustered into a star field area, and that will be our focus or theater of activity. And so we could actually do this live over the internet, and broadcast it in a night vision mode, where people can remotely contribute with their intention, their meditation, focus, and so forth, with those who are in the field, on the ground, and making the connection, just as expressed, and just how you said, how it can return, so that people can see this as it's happening. So you have this wonderful cluster of lasers that are framing a part of the sky, the star field, and that will be the theatre of activity. And so everything that would be occurring in there, and stream that live. That's a wonderful initiative that there's still yet to do, but that's another SERPA idea that we're going to be putting forward perhaps later this year. But there you are, to get the star flares is quite astonishing. And when it happens, there is a moment of internal recognition. And this is important, really. It's something I tried to teach and was teaching, asking people to do quite a lot of the last training, was to, once they see and make a connection externally, is to then make it a connection internally, because therein is that interface, that connection. That's where the intrapersonal development begins too. When things are going off over and above your head, it's very tempting to keep with it. But yeah, at the same time, I'm asking people to sort of hang on a minute, let's be quiet, let's be still, let's go in and see what downloads of information you might be getting, what feelings you're getting. The emotional intelligence part is the understanding the feelings, and the emotional intelligence there is to translate that into that which you're ready to understand and ready to know. And that, again, I come back to that, is very key, and it's very much part of the SERPA training. So, flashbulbs are fantastic when you do see them.
I love your passion, and I really love your excitement. I know the audience can pick up on that genuine excitement that you have. And it feels, I think one of the questions I've always wanted to ask you is, I know you have a great deal of communication with our star families. Sure. And in your estimation, how do they perceive us? And with that said, in their perception of us, are they just as anxious to connect with us as we are with them?
Yeah, very good question. Their perception of us really is one of utter gentleness, utter lovingness, who remind me of that wonderful story of Huan Yin. And she is seen as the most beautiful, who has foregone Nirvana, or Nibbana. Nirvana is stepping into that great void, which is not void at all. It's stuffed full of wonderful divine love, and translated as bliss and so forth. And they remind me of very much Kuan Yin energy, in that they are there jeering us forward and presenting us with information, subtle information, and connecting with us on a very, very subtle interpersonal level. And really wanting us to come on, like, for example, to wake up.
To
know the nature of ourselves, to understand the tragic comedy, that's unfolding around us, and the connection is quite profound, and the wisdom that can come through. And so they're really there in support of us, fully understanding the predicament and the dilemma that we're in, and that we are very much embroiled in programs upon programs upon programs. But that's okay. That's okay. Their involvement is perhaps on a very, very subtle consciousness level, in ways in which we're consciously not necessarily aware of. But yet sometimes it can be very obvious in terms of lucid dreaming and getting visions and geometric forms and so forth. But also, of course, and this is something very important too, like any would-be initiate, if they wish to make that connection, do so and ask. You can ask and make that connection, because they're extremely honouring and gentle, and once you want to make that connection and put the request out, basically it's as simple as saying, okay, I acknowledge that I have some kind of interconnectivity with the wider cosmic community, and one may have some lucid dreams and so forth, may have those very lucid astral contact visions and so forth. And you can ask, you can say, okay, I'm ready to take this one step further. And so teaching will come through, and learning will come through. Consciousness will begin to open a little bit further. And so they're also willing and able, and they're ready to help. But of course, in that sense, they're not going to put themselves upon you. It's really a matter of getting to a place and space where you go, aha, okay, I realize I'm on this path, and I'm ready to move forwards with it.
Yes.
Okay, and then that contact can begin to flourish. It's a bit like if you want the fast lane, you'll get it. If you want the slow lane, you'll get it. Yeah.
God, so, I agree with that so much. And you know, I would like you to cover also, there's always people pontificating about why they aren't revealing themselves, why they aren't showing themselves here in this dimensional level. What is your take on that? Why they've had to hide themselves? Why the contact with them has been so challenging, if not very difficult, for many years?
Sure, you could say on one end of the spectrum, they have, in many ways, and in some ways, very obvious ways, presented their presence.
Especially yeah, lately, course. Martin. Did you
I'm
know,
sorry.
Especially lately, not to cut you off, but last month was one of the highest UFO sightings months for the state of California.
Right. Well, these questions are excellent because there are, you know, it's like an onion and there are many levels, but I'll try and descend slowly so that the listeners can grasp. I'm not very good at sometimes simplifying stuff. That's my lesson here.
It's all okay.
So, and I try not to skirt too far on the edges before I get to the center.
Right.
But I'm going to start with C.J. Jung and the collective, his reference to collective unconsciousness. And then I'm going to say the human project. And then what I'm going to say is that where we are internally within, let's say, the collective human consciousness, let's see it as a collective singular project, if you will, for the moment. Okay, so what happens on the surface in this perspective is determined what happens interiorly. So therefore, the more awake and aware we are internally, then that will percolate out and eventually manifest in innumerable ways on the surface. And one could argue that that's occurring in a fantastic geopolitical evidence that's occurring around the planet.
Absolutely.
Okay, so and there is a match here with what's occurring externally. So, for example, you know, we have the internet, so there is this communication going on. But yet that's also a reflection of an internal shift. And so the two are linked, but it's an internal project. It's the internal. So, you know, the idea that they will appear en masse and so forth and it'll be one big party is sometime in the future, I'm sure. But what we see externally is a reflection of the internal. And so as the human project becomes a little bit more awake and aware, so becoming a little bit more and more connected with the greater cosmic community and so forth, in that sense, and able internally, spiritually, as we're developing more and more and more, able to handle these revelations and so forth, etc., it doesn't become a shock. It's a natural organic growth, if you will. And I don't know whether that's of any help, but I mean, for a lot of us, you know, we're kind of wanting it to you know, really, really, you know, exponentially increase the contact, so forth. Because we want to be in another place where we aren't at the moment, because the world is the way it is, and it's challenging, and it's by and large dark, and you know, and it's a problem. But you know, the more and more, you know, we have crystal, we have indigo, and other incarnates coming in, and they're bringing into the collective consciousness aspects of their awakened awareness, and that's percolating out. And so, you know, for the Archonic Network, we're, you know, I think I mentioned before, we're gate crashing their party, and we're not welcome. So,
yay.
Yeah. And so then that brings us to the point of, well, there are nefarious interests who are wanting to keep the glass dome over our heads and pretend there's nothing there as well.
Right.
So that's part of the drama too. Yeah.
There is quite a bit of drama, isn't there? Why does one person incarnate with their gifts fully intact and another does not? I know that it's just a very large chunk of the spiritual community. We often talk about how we're still wanting so much to, you know, embrace our gifts, remember who we are. And I know part of that piece of that puzzle is this contact with our star families. Do you have anything to say about that?
Sure. It's one way of answering that is like seeds, you know, seeds which will open. And a flower will blossom in its own way, in its own time, in its own course. And so it can be frustrating. It can be problematic to people who really want to come into their own self-empowerment and really say hello to their gifts and begin to serve. And this is an internal directive which goes deep within the nature of themselves, what I call the story of you, the book of you, internal book of you on the pages, you know, has written, yeah, if you will, where you've come from and where you're heading and where you are in that personal journey. And so for some it can be frustrating because they want to come into that empowerment. ET contact is a helpful bridge. And so people who are drawn towards making that connection from a heart space, it's always very important to emphasize from the heart space, are very often on the precipice of ready to make known to themselves the gifts that they have. But yeah, of course, the old vernacular of gifts and the old sort of spiritualism of the past, long past, are really what we naturally have already.
It's like a part of us that we're just basically taking back, you know.
But
you know, you made a really good point. You said it must be from the heart space, this contact with the star families. So what happens when people are not coming from the heart space and they make contact?
Right. Okay. So, Do they? Well, question is, what sort of contact are they making, if at all, and why is that the case? And so it brings back to the point of using the heart. Well, contact for many is challenging, and it's not always the same for everybody. Contact for some who are on a mind journey will receive and make a contact on that particular dimension, if you like, in a natural sense, in that level. If you're employing heart, then you're now really free to make a connection on a more of a deeper intra-personal and interdimensional spectrum. And the reason why I say that is because in my modest and very limited experience of unity, the the grounding from which all of things come, the duality, the nature of things, the opposites and so forth, arise from this one constant. And that one constant or unity is an ambient frequency, which is downloaded and understood to be love. And it's an energetic.
Right.
So coming from the heart space, you're really now free in free water, if you like, a distance in interdimensional, making contact at the highest possible levels, because you've got bolted to you and you're appealing to that wonderful harmonic frequency that the heart resonates with, and therefore your contact is going to be very broad, very supportive, very loving, and very nurturing. But of course, those who are literally operating from a mental spectrum are getting just, if you will, just a veneer aspect of contact.
Yeah, that's what I was going to ask you, because I have met some who they're very excited about making contact, but it's almost what you're saying is there's so much more to this ET contact that's been kind of flying all over the internet, and that is that there's almost a responsibility within each one of us to work on the layers around our heart so yeah. that we're really showing, you know, a complete, total wholeness within ourselves. I mean, I'm not saying we have to be perfect, but to make sure that we're capable of coming from a heart-centered intention versus a mind-centered intention.
Yeah. Yeah, and what's interesting here is that biologically the heart is ancient by compared to the brain. By that I mean is that it's the first organ that's biologically cohering as a collection of cells, out of which, interestingly, comes the tongue. And then in the last trimester, right at the very end, the synapses are polished off. So,
isn't that interesting?
Yeah.
I didn't know that. I knew the heart was the first one, but that's very interesting about the tongue.
Yeah, sure. So one thing I often speak about is that when people say, well, you know, they want contact to be supportive and loving, and they want to work from that space, and because there's a certain amount of fear, some kind of Hollywood propaganda and so forth, and that's causing a block, etc. and so forth. But they want to get past that. So as I mentioned before, we help people to navigate through the maze of programs, the forest, if you like, but also. Part of the ET contact scenario is also working on one's inner self. Now, by that I mean we have to look at the world in which we carry around ourselves. We have a world, a mental world, an emotional world. We have a holistic environment that we're carrying around with ourselves, and there are stories, there are experiences, there are reactions, there is programs, there are concepts, there's culture and so forth, etc. And also, of course, there are thoughts and there are quality of thoughts, and the words that we speak have a certain resonation. And so I often say, look, you know, when we're doing this work, because it's our focus, surface focus is the intrapersonal level, we have to work at that level too to be able to understand that part of ourselves that needs to be cleaned, if you like, needs to be made aware of the words we use, the reactions. Of course, we're all human, we have our challenges and so forth, but the world in which we carry around ourselves need to be, closely looked at, because we attract on an energetic level of similar ilk. And then whilst you're doing that, you're naturally then engaging heart, and the heart will do the rest, you know. So it's working on our subtle mental realm, the words that we use and how we interact with people and so forth. And that's an important aspect. But also the heart will help that too. And so it's also about harmlessness, you know, compassion and understanding, all these things of which our star family are, they understand all that, they've been there, they've moved forwards from there, and yeah. Now they're hoping that we get that too, you know.
And you know, it's so true, because there is still a level of fear with contact, and you know, rightfully so, because the government has been working with some of the dark ET races, you know, I think one of the questions that many people will ask is, well, how are we knowing that we're avoiding connecting with them? You know, how do we know when someone is speaking to us and they're sharing information that they've so-called channeled or downloaded or whatever? How do we know that the connection that they've made is a pure and clean one?
Yeah, exactly. You know, I usually say the same thing about when you're reading stuff. It's all secondary.
Very true. And,
yeah, it's all secondary. Primary information is direct experience, internal. That is true. That's the truth. Everything I say is not true. And I say that because what is true is what one experiences. And that's cutting to the chase there. And not to say that what I'm pointing to has value and to some extent some truth in it, of course. But what one experiences is primary, and that's where the truth is in experience. Now, when you're hearing information, just like when you're reading information, when you're hearing information, you have to ask yourself, does it make me feel good? Is this healthy? Does this resonate my heart? You know, you have to become awake and aware of the incoming information. And not always it's very easy to discern. And there are tricks. You can ask in your night sleep to get answers. And sometimes you'll play out a drama and it may not be very pleasant. And so you may be getting the answer that you wanted. And so it's unpacked, if you like. You've asked for that information to be unpacked in your dream state. And you can ask for that. You ask your consciousness to reveal whether it's healthy or otherwise, and it can show itself in terms of the dream scenario. And also, by the way, another tip is that if when you meet somebody for the very first time and they seem to be very nice and very, very, very interesting and engaging, and they have a very nice voice, they've held your attention and so forth, that evening when you go home, watch your dreams and see how your dreams play out. And very often, at an unconscious level, in answering your question also, you'll get these images flowing back, which at an unconscious level, it's very intelligent, will show you and tell you that which is unhealthy, if that's the case. So there's two points there. One is to ask yourself, is this over heavy with information? How much heart-orientated information is in there? The value of the words, do the words sound nice, or, you know, are they harmonious, are they loving, are they over exact, you know, officious, and so forth, and find a place where you feel it may or may not resonate with you. And so that's an internal assessment.
Yeah,
and discernment too.
I really feel like we are on the hot seat as the trailblazers of society. We're the ones that are stepping out of the box. We're the ones that are really kind of reaching out and expanding our willingness to just see all information, you know, Look at it all without being in such a polar perspective. Yeah. And with that, we need discernment, but the discernment is not something, you know, I have people write me all the time because of the interviews that I do. And they say, well, how do you know that he's not of the dark or she's not of the light or whatever? And sure. I always write back and say, listen, you know, I just know what I know. And it's exactly what you said. When you meet somebody, you feel it within your inner core. You know that is something that is of a positive nature to you. And you have to be willing to stand in your authority to say, I know what I know, and it doesn't matter what comes across my desk. I am staying with it. You know, it's like the perfect definition of loyalty, you know?
Yeah, sure. But of course it's okay to get it dreadfully wrong as well, you know?
Right. But the point is like, and that's a learning lesson, and you go through enough of those, after a while they stop. I mean, seriously, if you look at it long enough, trust me, I've been there. Yeah. But we really all have such amazing radar that we have been programmed not to pay attention to. We've been programmed not to lean on. And now we're like little children coming out and going, gosh, can I really trust this hit that I'm getting? And, you know, am I getting this fear? Is it coming from outside myself or is it coming from within? And, you know, this is all like information and intel that we should be using constantly when it's an inside job, you know?
Yeah, yeah. And also your heart resonate, well, not so much resonate, sorry. Your heart will let you know too. And for example, you know, does it beat a little extra, you know, is it beating a little bit faster? You know, thumping a little bit?
Good point. Yeah.
It's so intelligent. It so understands because it is the link back to the harmony. It is the link back to that unity which all duality rests upon. It's the primary force of all things. It's the originator. It's the stuff that has created everything, and it's a harmonic. And your heart has a direct link there. And so in that space of duality, you know, is this person, you know, this or that, so forth, the heart will respond. If you're sensitive to your heart and you're working with your heart and you're asking your heart, and you can put your right hand on your heart too, and your heart will let you know. That's emotional intelligence too.
Yeah, that's such a good point. You know, I just love talking to you, Martin, because I really do feel that you are doing such a service to the community at large. And this, in my, you know, just listening to you today, I'm realizing that the day-to-day existence of humanity in our future is so much a part of us bridging this gap of communication with our star families. I mean, it's just becoming more and more apparent as I talk to you that this is such an integral role in our empowerment and our remembering who we are and our getting out of fear and our, you know, transitioning, going from, you know, coming from heart versus mind.
Yeah.
You know, it's just, it's amazing. It's so rich and fulfilling to hear this. You know,
yes, yes.
I was, with that said, you know, what do you feel is going to happen with all the religions around the world when this finally does take place?
Not a lot, actually.
I love that.
I say that because Christianity, you know, it's key doctrines of the sin, redemption, and incarnation. Its key doctrines have survived, you know, through a number of trials and tribulations, and it survived all the way through, and the church, so the Christian church, has managed to keep its head above the waters for all this time, and it's still there. And in fact, I did a paper on what would the effects be to religion with the disclosure of ET, and I found not only that the core doctrines are malleable and they can bend with the times very easily, and that they've had to in the past, but also some of the key church figures, and certainly in the Catholic Church, openly welcome contact and seemingly view them in the wider scope as brothers and sisters, interestingly enough. So I think Christianity will continue and persist, and it will just work its way around it, as it has done with challenges in the past. I think we'll probably see an emerging spirituality that is not of a human construct, and I think that's very important as we move forward, as you mentioned earlier, to become, you know, working as we are, as light workers. In our modest capacity to awaken each other and modestly with others, but not put it upon people, and to understand the lessons that we have to learn and for everybody too, but to eventually merge into a spirituality that is not of a religious construct, a human construct. And so I came away from theology being very much informed historically about the church, but also still knowing that it's a very much a human construct. And we're moving away from those constructs.
It's interesting. I just read something the other day and it really resonated. And they were talking about, you know, the 12 basic religions of the planet and how they were not created from a light position. They were actually created by those that rule the planet. And the light saw that these were, they were structures or constructs that humanity was really embracing and they were really hanging on to. So they tried to counteract the so-called controlling and the disempowerment that can come possibly from religion. And they tried to imbue it with, love and harmonious, thoughts and perspectives and that kind of thing. And I just thought that was really interesting. You know, we are truly going to be challenged to move away from anything that is saying you've got to do this and this is how you do it, especially if it comes from outside yourself.
Yeah. I mean, one of the big people go onto the SERPA website and they'll see the section on policy and ethos. You know, it's very much about thinking for yourself and following no one. And so my role is a challenge, because for me, what I can do is point, and I think that's about the best one can do is to point. But that pointing will be hopefully away from classic human constructs. And
I think you've got that nailed, Mark.
I've still got the hammer in my hand, and I've got some way to go. It's a 6-inch nail. I've got a lot of hammering yet to do.
I don't think you have a problem there. Well, now I noticed that people have to pass. They have to not pass. Sorry about that. That people have to actually fill in an application to attend these programs. Can you give a little feedback on that? I'm noticing that you look at things like their mental illness background, their meditation and practice per day, what sort of fears, have they had any contact, things like that.
Yeah, for sure. Okay, firstly, obviously, on a practical level, they'll give their name and I'll know who I'm addressing. all that stuff starts off, at the beginning, and then it works through. And it kind of enables the team to, or particularly me, to get a kind of an overview of really where they are with regards to their internal questing, And so, it's important to know that they're going to feel comfortable and to know that they're in good health. All these things are very important and essential. So the application form is really a way in which I get to initially kind of get behind the person who's making that step forwards in that intrapersonal and interdimensional shift, which will eventually, become part of their reality. And by no modest way, this is a journey, and it's a wonderful one. It's a wonderful one in terms of opening consciousness. And so, in that application form, there's an opportunity for them to say whether they have had contact. It's not necessarily important, of course, if they're not conscious of that. But they have an opportunity to say, what they are experiencing and what they would like to experience and so forth. So that's the first thing. And actually, there's a confidentiality which enables the meeting to become private, and so that those who want their privacy is respected. But of course, there's also an opportunity to speak about their experiences in privacy, that they don't have to let anybody know who they are. They think that privacy is still upheld, and they can we can publish exactly what's happening behind the scenes, and to be open and transparent about what's happening on our SERPA trainings. But they don't have to be named, of course. So.
So basically, you're just meeting them at their level, wherever they are.
And if there's any questions that they want, if they're not sure about anything, at SERPA we have this ability for people to have a video chat with me so we can meet in person. So if there's any concerns at all or want to just meet me and to say hi and have a further chat, we can. If there's any questions, they're able to do that face to face. And this is, I think this is a unique aspect for SERPA. And it's, I think it's helpful for people if they, though they can reach me directly. Yeah.
Well, I also, the other thing I really want to point out to everyone is I love the fact that you have a transparency section on your website. And in this day and age, with the compression of light on the planet, with the actual so-called Armageddon being at its all-time high, so close to our sphere of ground zero here, it is so imperative that we associate ourselves when doing this sort of contact with organizations that are completely transparent and that there are no hidden agendas and there are no, you know, nefarious acts going on behind closed doors and that the best of all parties involved is the intention. And so I really, really just commend you on that, Martin. I feel it. And after talking to you many, many times, I'm really impressed with your protocol and the way you've laid it out and everything. So with that said, I noticed that you have three of these conferences coming up in the United States. So you are coming into the United States, and they're going to be in Texas, New Mexico, and California. Did you want to talk a little bit about that?
Sure. This is a wonderful opportunity now to come and see what we're doing over here in Europe. We've got this unique spin on contact, and particularly the emphasis, as mentioned before, on the intrapersonal and skill development training side, which is unique and very much our emphases. And so Texas is a fantastic location, and we're really excited. I mean, there's a wonderful retreat there that we're going to be training at. It's going to be on site, so we're not going to be going away and coming back on site. We've got Roswell. I mean, it says everything for itself there. Roswell is the mecca of what we're doing. And so that would be absolutely astonishing. That's in August, 15, 16, 17, 18. And then, of course, Joshua Tree. We're getting Joshua Tree now. And that's August 22, 23, 24, and 25. And now that's a magical place also. So this is new for us. We're branching out from Europe. And have a look at the website, and any one of those that really appeal, then there is a form there that you can click, and there's also a training content which shows you exactly what we'll be going through. But this is these are wonderful locations, and we look forward to seeing you there.
Yeah. So now your website, everybody, if you want to check this out, you're going to go to serper.org. That's CERPER.org. And you can get a whole bunch of information up there. I will also be loading up the flyers on my website as well. And I'm here to assist Martin in whatever capacity he needs, because I really do feel he's doing a phenomenal service for the planet and for all of us. And so, Martin, I just want to tell you we're getting to the bottom of the hour, and I really appreciate your time. And I feel like today people will have more clarity, that it's not just all about, oh, wow, there's a ship in the sky, and wow, isn't that cool? There, you've really given some substantial things for us to ponder on as far as us expanding our consciousness. I mean, it's just the way in which you've presented is just completely different than anything I've heard before.
Sure, this is sort of step two. You know, this is contact 2.0, if you like. And I think I've heard that phrase on the news before, just recently.
But I love that.
Political. But it is that. It's the next generation of contact, which is a focus, real focus on the intrapersonal side, as well as making connections with our star fans overhead and above and seeing them in the field and manifesting as neutrinos, and having that level of contact is wonderful and beautiful too. But let's get to the point and get to the heart of the matter. It's the intrapersonal and consciousness developed on a multidimensional level.
Sounds great. Well, thank you, Martin. Everybody, don't forget to check out serper.org, or you can also access it. I will be having it up on my website as well. And we wish everybody a wonderful day. Get your money together, because his conferences are really reasonably priced, and they will be life-changing. So I thank everyone again. Have a beautiful day, and Martin, namaste.
Oh, namaste to you. Blessings as well. Thank you so much.
You're welcome. Thank you.